We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS Action. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers
since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Well, this morning in studio, we have Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. How are you this morning?
I am well, considering what we've been dealing with the last 4 or 5 days, Scott. Matter of fact, I'm very well, so thank you for asking.
Did you walk here in this cold weather?
I did.
That's a cold stroll.
And almost for the umpteenth time in the last 4 or 5 days, I almost broke the other 9 ribs. I almost bought it out here on South Church, but we held steady and we persevered. How about that?
That's all that matters.
we got 9 ribs intact on the left side. Let's put it that way.
By the way, our phone number, if you have any questions, feel free to text in 615-893-1450. A lot's been going on. I mean, everything from the snow and ice to accidents. And thankfully, most of the accidents, at least that I saw and heard about, were not, you know, where there were serious injuries involved.
Yeah, Rutherford County was spared the full effects of the storm, unlike Williamson and especially Davidson County and the counties to our west. That doesn't mean that the people in Laverne who are with NES or some of those outlying areas where they had trees, we didn't have some effect. But let me just say, Middle Tennessee Electric, Chris Jones, Chuck Barber, those guys at MTE did an outstanding job. Before the storm even arrived, Scott, you know, we were in constant communication about staging men and equipment so that we could respond appropriately once the storm hit. They absolutely did that. Our first responders, led by Chris Clark for the EMA director, did an outstanding job. They have worked tirelessly all through the night for the last 4 or 5 days. And then, of course, Greg Brooks, our road superintendent, keeping roads clear, and our maintenance department, led by Adam Dodd. They've done a phenomenal job. But anybody who's lived in this county for any length of time and endured an event like this, that's par for the course. These guys excel. The maintenance people were out there Monday and Tuesday in the cold, wet, tired, but doing their job so the rest of us come to work today. So it's still hazardous out there. Everybody be very, very careful. It's slick, especially if you're walking down South Church. You don't want to fall on the ice. But the city of Murfreesboro, city of Smyrna, Laverne, Eagleville, and the county have done a fantastic job, as usual, making sure that it's as safe as possible so we can get to work today.
And then I know one of the news stories over the weekend, one of the county firefighters, a captain, lost his home to a fire.
Yeah, thank you, Tyler Benefield and his wife Harley. Thank you for bringing that up. But I believe WGNS, Scott, did a story on that, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe they posted a GoFundMe account to help them. Harley, her husband Tyler, is a captain down at the Plainview Public Safety Building. And Tyler Benefield is a fantastic servant for this county. And he has been serving this county for years in that capacity. And what was tragic was that this was an older home. I'm not sure how the fire started, but it was immediately engulfed, and she didn't even get to save their pets.
Yeah.
And which is sad and tragic. They lost everything. So there is a GoFundMe account to help them. And I would just urge your listeners, whatever they can chip in to help Tyler and Harley, please do that. We're a community that gives a lot and we get a lot in return, most especially when we give. And so this is an opportunity for us to give back to those who've given to us for years.
Definitely a positive thing to donate, to give, to help out that family, because from what I understand, their insurance lapsed and they didn't realize it. You know how it's auto-drafted each month?
I did not know that.
And you know, with things coming out of our account each month, it's so easy to not realize.
To not keep track of it. I can't tell you how many times that has happened to Jenny and I. We will, we'll change a debit card.
Yeah.
Because we don't have credit cards anymore. Haven't for years. But we got debit cards and we'll change a debit card because we either misplaced it or something like that. and we forget to tell the account that's drafting off that account that we've, and it lapses, and we don't know it. We don't know it, and it's just an oversight. So I did not know that. So I would plead with your listeners. I believe WGNS did a story. Did you not?
Yeah, we
and
did.
I believe you linked the GoFundMe account on the story. I'm pretty sure you did.
We did.
Thank you, Scott and WGNS, for that. But if your listeners are so moved and so inclined, I would encourage you to give and be generous in your giving for Tyler and Harley Benefield.
Man, I can't imagine, because he works, of course, for Rutherford County, but his house was in Chapel Hill, which is Marshall County.
And just right over the county line, by the way.
I can't imagine getting that phone call.
No, and he was at work.
Yeah.
And so he was doing his job for the county, and his wife barely got out with her shoes on.
They lost literally everything. Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. I saw pictures of the house, the next day, and it was gone.
Yeah. And I appreciate WGNS so much, you, Scott, bringing that up. Again, I've said this with Bart in here. This is the Good Neighbor Network, and this is why you're the Good Neighbor Network. And thank you very much for bringing that up and for your listeners getting involved in this family as they have been involved in our lives for so many years.
And going back to Rutherford County as a whole, is this the time of year where commissioners are sitting down and putting together, talking about rather budgets and things that are coming up?
Yeah, so we talk about all the new projects. This is typically, we get into the budget season around March and April is when we kind of get hot and heavy on that, for lack of a better descriptive term. So we spend January and February kind of laying the groundwork. And part of the laying that groundwork for the new budget is, what large capital projects do we have? For the first time ever, the county has a capital improvements projects list. In other words, what capital projects do we need to think about funding going forward? And this capital projects list is typically a 10-year vision. And this was a byproduct of the Forensic Center and the Transfer Station, both of which are doing really, really well. The Forensic Center is ahead of schedule on construction and is already below projected cost. So we're already ahead of schedule and below budget. The Transfer Station is going much better than anybody expected, except for the mayor, who anticipated this kind of result. But it's generating almost $100,000 of revenue back to the county. So those are going real well. But the next big project on our horizon is we've got to have a new jail. And that is a result of a study that was done by the Tennessee Corrections Institute back about 11 months ago, February of 2025. And that study basically said we have a chronic overpopulated issue at the jail. In other words, we have too many inmates for the number of cells. And the current jail is in a serious rate of decline and deterioration. So we have to do something before the state or the feds step in. And we have about a 5-year window to do that. And so that is the next big thing on the county's list. And we will be, not coincidentally, we'll be bringing that up tonight at public safety for the first time.
Now, I know one of the issues at the county jail, they've got a lot of state inmates, but
yes,
something that I don't think people really talk about, a lot of those state inmates are there because they're facing additional charges, they're facing a court reappearance, things along those lines.
Exactly. And so there's very limited things that we can do. And this would be a great question for Sheriff Fitzhugh and Deputy Chief Spence, because they run the facility over there, and they know. But example, all the state inmates that are at the Rutherford County Detention Center are all Rutherford County residents. And so unless the state says, yes, you can move them to a state penitentiary somewhere, we can't move them.
Yeah.
So they belong here until the state says, yes, we have room to move them. Our capacity at the jail is about, at full capacity, is about 877. We're right now at 1,050.
Wow.
And so we're chronically beyond capacity. And that beyond being capacity creates additional strain on the detention center. So I wish we had the luxury to say to those state inmates that are at the detention center, we're going to give you back to the state. That is only a luxury we have if the state says, yes, you can bring them.
And that doesn't happen until after sentencing. And sometimes
sentencing
will be 6 months out.
Oh, if you're lucky, it's 6 months out in some cases. And so what happened is those people are still detained and we are still responsible for them. At the end of the day, the adult detention center, Scott, is nothing more than another byproduct of this county's growth. This county now is 400,000 people. When that facility was built, it was 200,000. So you think about it. We've doubled, the county's doubled in size, and yet that adult detention center hasn't kept up with the rate of population growth. And so we have to do something before the state or the feds step in. If you want to know how bad it is when the feds step in, just look at what happened in Shelby County. They got a $1 billion facility that's out of control because that county commission did not get to dictate the type of facility, the cost of the facility. The feds came in and just dictated everything because they were out of compliance.
When you look at the jail where it's currently positioned, is there a thought of, you know, let's buy a new piece of land, let's put it on a different piece of property, let's move where we're located now?
There is, and this study group that we convened included personnel from the Sheriff's Department, include three county commissioners, myself, and different experts to basically do the research. Basically, where we are that now moves us to taking it to public safety is that we've determined we have a problem. We have scoped that problem through this study through the Tennessee Corrections Institute, Bob Bass and Jim Hart. And so they said they've acknowledged that we have a problem. It's a serious problem. It's not going away. And you probably have 5 years to fix it. We have basically to 2030 to fix this problem. And so there is a window to fix it. But if you think about the growth of inmates at the jail, if we're at 1,000 now, we're going to be at 1,500 in 4 or 5 years. So it gets worse, not better, unless we do something. And so we are at a fork in the road, which is if we have to do something, what do we do? Do we build a new facility in another location, or do we renovate or tear down that existing facility? And so there's a lot that goes into that. And so you're exactly right. So tonight we're going to go to public safety and say, here's the fork in the road. We need a programming study to determine what direction do we need to go in. And so that is really the next step. We need to program what the needs are so we can determine if our current facility renovated will suffice, or do we need just to build a new facility off campus.
And if you built there on site, if you added on to that existing building, can it be built upwards anymore?
It was structurally designed to do so 20 plus years ago. But codes and things have changed since then. Not only that, part of the problem, a big part of the problem, is the land that's over there has settled, and in some cases settled a foot. So there are some serious structural issues that need to be examined to determine if we can even do it. But here's the big $64,000 question. If you're going to renovate that existing facility, you literally have to build a temporary facility in advance to move those prisoners. You cannot renovate while the prisoners are there. So you're going to have to develop a temporary facility, and that creates all kinds of security issues. So it's something that we're going to consider, but it has its downside and its risk.
What is that county in Arizona that has a
Maricopa,
a tent city of a jail? Yeah,
I think their climate is a little more conducive. I think he got in trouble for that. Didn't he get in trouble for that?
Yeah.
What was that sheriff's name?
I forgot.
Golly,
you went back
to the time machine.
Yeah, it was so hot out there. They were talking about the temperature inside some of those tents they had was like 130 degrees.
I know, and he made them wear pink jumpsuits.
It was crazy.
I don't think that's an option for us in January.
No, I'd say not. But if you look at the jail where it sits today, I mean, it does look like there's space either kind of to the right of it or to the left of it,
right,
where there's a mobile home park. And I don't know if the idea of purchasing that property has ever been talked about.
Yeah. So in that whole area, part of that area is in a floodplain, and part of that area has really bad soils. And that is the issue. And the current facility's rate of deterioration is in large part caused by where it's located. And it's just not on a good foundation. And I don't know who did the civil engineering work for that project, but we've got some structural issues based on the ground. However, having said that, that doesn't mean that that's not an option for the county. It most certainly is. Again, I'm not trying to predetermine anything. What I'm saying is literally we're at a fork in the road, and the fork is this: do we renovate our current facility or do we build a new facility in another location? And this programming that we need to get done, which takes about 3 to 6 months, will help us decide that. So it's premature to decide which direction we're going in, other than we need to program this thing to find out.
And the cost involved in this, I know you mentioned $400 million. I forgot mm-hmm. how long ago that was.
Yeah, but three to 400 is what we said. Yes, sir.
Okay, so $300 to $400 million. How do we come up with that kind of money to build?
That is always the question. So Michael Smith and I, the finance director and I, have been aware of this project for over 2 years. And the county's finances are in incredible shape. As a matter of fact, you know that we have 3 AAA bond ratings. Our fund balance is larger than it's ever been. The county is doing phenomenally well. As a matter of fact, Scott, there are 95 counties in the state of Tennessee. Our balance sheet is better than any counties, including Williamson. With regard to the amount of debt that we have, our ability to service that debt early, these kind of things. So Michael and I strongly believe that we can build a $300 million jail, $300 to $350, without raising property taxes.
Is that if built on that property there?
No.
That's elsewhere.
That's a great question. That is, we've done this backwards a little bit. I told Michael, I said, this is a project we got to address. This is an issue we have to address, or we're going to be in deep doo-doo in 4 or 5 years. Literally. I said, I need to know how much I can build without raising property taxes. And Michael went to work, and he and I went back and forth and back and forth. And the number is fluid, but it's not less than 300, but it's probably closer to 320, 350. But that's not a number, because, again, I want to say, not to set expectations, but to say, hey, this is where we're at today. Now, if the economy goes in the toilet, Scott, of course, things change, right? So the county's in a real good place. We can build a $300 million plus facility without raising property taxes. And that's the goal. What do we need to do and not raise property taxes?
And of course, there's also a lot of other construction projects in the future. There's the idea that's being proposed of buying the old Bank of America building on East Main.
And we've already got a contract on that, and that has been factored in. The one thing that is not factored in, and I'm glad you brought this up, is Rutherford County School Board wants 2 new high schools in the next 4 or 5 years. So we can't build 2 high schools for $350, $400 million and a jail for $350, $400 million. We can't do both. We got to do one or the other. And, you know, I would just remind your listeners, this mayor, this county commission has spent almost $400 million in the last 3 years renovating Riverdale, Oakland, Smyrna, Laverne at cost of over $200 million, building Poplar Hill Elementary and building Poplar Hill Middle. And we opened Plainview when I first got here. So the Rutherford County school system has benefited greatly from our capital construction projects list over the last 3 years. And we now have to address probably some other issues going forward.
And as our county continues to grow, the home prices continue to go up. And with that being said, I think from what I understand, we're seeing a lot of families who move here who have kids who are middle school aged or older. In other words, the families, the spouses who are working, they're working upper level jobs. Mm-hmm. They're not just starting out. So therefore, they're able to more so afford to move here as opposed to those with primary and elementary age kids.
And what we have to do, and I have in 3 years, along with the commission, voted to approve 3 different affordable housing projects that have kind of, quite honestly, gone under the radar. And we should do my office should do a much better job promoting that or sharing that information. But you're right. We've got to make Rutherford County an affordable place to live. You can't do that, Scott, if you're going to constantly raise property taxes. You can't do it. And so it's no secret. We had to raise property taxes the first year I came into office. We had a $64 million budgeted deficit. We wiped that out. But we're in a good place. If we can be disciplined, I don't foresee a property tax increase for a short while. Now, again, things could change, but this budget will not include a property tax increase from the mayor in this next budget.
Now, if everything moves forward with the purchase of the old Bank of America building,
yes, sir,
renovations
mm-hmm.
take place, that's about $16 to $17 million total.
Yes, sir.
What's going to happen with the old Goldstein building?
That has yet to be determined. What I would like to do is I would like to keep that facility. I don't think selling it is in the best interest of the county. We sold the old Murfreesboro Bank and Trust building, if you recall, on the north side of the square, and now we got commissioners openly regretting that decision. Let's not repeat that mistake. The county doesn't need to sell the Goldstein building from a financial perspective, and quite honestly, I would like, and I've talked to your dad about this, I would like to see the Goldstein building, at least the bottom floor, because there's 20,000 feet in there, 10,000 on the lower floor and 10,000 on the second floor. I would like to see a museum, culture, arts facility in that building, and with the second floor being event space for Rutherford County and its employees. So, but that's just the mayor's idea. It hasn't been studied or examined. That's just an idea. But I think it would be in a great attraction to further develop as we develop the downtown square area.
I know at one point the county went to the owners group of what used to be the State Farm headquarters here in town on Memorial at DeJarnett. Are there any thoughts on going back to that group to ask again or put a proposal together to purchase that?
So that is over 400,000 square feet heated and cooled. It has sat vacant for years. Last time they contacted me, they wanted $80 million. And the big question is, Scott, what do we do with a 400,000 square foot building? Now, you can't put a school there because we've got two high schools within 2 miles of that facility, Siegel and Oakland. So we don't need a school there. So what are we going to do? What's the county going to do with 400,000 square feet? And I know that the maintenance, the annual maintenance on that facility, just on the landscaping in the building to keep it running, is over $1 million a year. If somebody can tell me what purpose we could use it for, I'm all ears. But its location and the way it's laid out and the way it's structurally built, it's in great shape. I just don't know what we would do with 400,000 square feet.
That's a lot of space.
That's a lot of space.
And a jail would not go there. There's no,
no
way residents would stand for that.
Well, not just that, but it's the renovation issues associated with that would make it wholly untenable for that. That is not an option at all.
Now, how much control does, let's say, the county commission have over what is, the school board budget, the makeup of that budget, and how is the county commission able to either say yes or no to some of those projects?
That's it. Yes or no. And quite honestly, that's part of the process that I wish the Rutherford County School Board worked with the commission a little bit better on with regard to what they put in their budget, because the county commission can only vote yes or no. And when it comes to the appropriating the money, that's the county commission and the mayor's responsibility. But I wish we had more input on what their budget looked like, but we don't. And the process says that they get to construct the budget and we get to approve it or disapprove it. That's the process.
One of the big questions moving into the future would surround the idea of Rutherford County having their own sewer system. And that would probably progress the building of more neighborhoods in the county.
I love the idea of Rutherford County developing a sewer system. Not surprisingly, the big factor there is rock.
Yeah.
Which means money. We have a tremendous amount of rock. It is very expensive to lay a sewer line in Rutherford County. And quite honestly, I don't know how we would make the taxpayers whole on such an investment. You're talking billions of dollars, not millions, billions with a B. And I think it would be great long term, but I'm not sure how we get there, Scott, without having an incredible increase in taxes. And I'm just having a hard time getting there, if that makes any sense.
I can't imagine the cost, because you'd also have to open up new water treatment plants as well, I would imagine.
And I'm not sure, and I really do not know, but it's worth finding out. The Corps of Engineer runs Percy Priest, and they literally control how much water we discharge or bring out of Percy Priest. And so obviously, if you're going to have a sewer system, you're going to need a water treatment system. If you have a water treatment system, you're going to need lots of water. And so I just don't know if the Corps, what their involvement in that would be and to what extent they would approve such a project. I know that CUD and Roger Goodson, they do a good job of monitoring that part of it. And we've had several discussions on it. But we're thinking now that we need to find alternative sources for fresh water, potable water, as opposed to a sewage treatment facility.
And we do have a few questions. And again, you can text us at 615-893-1450. One of the questions deals with the Forensic Center, and it's asking about outside agencies using it and what type of charge would be in place for those outside agencies to utilize the Forensic Center being built in Rutherford County.
So the answer is I've already received several calls from county mayors in Middle Tennessee inquiring as to when we get this built the end of this year, when it opens the end of this year, will we accept autopsies from other counties? The answer is yes, and there will be a fee charged. It'll be a competitive rate based on what the other autopsy centers or forensic centers in Tennessee are charging. And that is the same business model. What you've just outlined for their forensic center is exactly the same business model that we're using at the transfer station. The private sector using the transfer station, and then that private sector then offsets the cost of the operation of the transfer station, such that the county now has about, every month, has about $100,000 profit that we put back into the general fund or the solid waste fund. The same model exists for the forensic center. So absolutely, that's going to be a big part of the business model that operates the forensic center.
How much are autopsies? I mean, how much do people charge for them?
I believe, Scott, right now, we pay $2,500 per autopsy plus some other ancillary fees to take our bodies to Nashville. Not counting transportation costs and other ancillary costs, but I believe it's $2,500 per autopsy.
If I'm correct, we have to do autopsies for not only every suspicious death, but also overdoses.
You've done your homework.
I've heard a lot of talk about it.
That's exactly right. Whenever there's a suspicious death, we have to do an autopsy. And the autopsy many times is, the requirement for an autopsy is determined by a police investigation or the district attorney or those kind of things. And so we do currently, Rutherford County does about 350 autopsies a year. Obviously, that number is growing because of our population growth. But we do about 350 a year, and that's a big cost.
And this is, I guess, the same rule all over the state for other departments, other law enforcement departments. They have to do the same types of autopsies in the same situations.
Yeah, and counties like Bedford and Marshall and Williamson and Wilson and Sumner and Cannon and Warren, and here I go, Coffee County, all those surrounding counties are going, forensic medical in Nashville is backed up. They've got too much work, and it takes too long to get the reports back. Because remember, an autopsy in a suspicious death investigation, the detectives are wanting a timely turnaround because they're trying to collect evidence, right? And so there is a genuine need for a new forensic center in Tennessee, and I'm glad Rutherford County stepped up and addressed its needs first. And to the extent that we can help other counties after we've addressed our needs, that's great.
This next question is kind of off subject, but I guess people are curious about it. And it's talking about the Rutherford County Library System. And if this library board that is currently in place now, if they move forward with removing any types of books off the shelves, is the county going to continue to fund their portion going towards the Rutherford County Library System?
I will take a look at their budget requests and make that determination once I have received their budget request. I don't know how else to answer that question. I'm not trying to be evasive, but I haven't received their budget request yet, so I cannot comment on approving or not approving their budget request until I see their request.
You hear questions like that and thoughts of pulling books off shelves, and I can't help but to think about the 1930s and the Nazis when they were in power and talking about how they removed books that were about Sigmund Freud. They were removing books about famous scientists who went on to come up with all these cures and whatnot.
I would take issue with the analogy, because we're not talking about books based on science. We're talking about books based on a social or political agenda that might, because of the graphic nature of those books, might be inappropriate or would be inappropriate for children.
Why?
And so that's kind of what we're talking about. So we're not talking about you don't have access to those books. You just don't maybe not have access to those books at the Rutherford County Library. You still have access. So we're not talking about not having access. We're just talking about not access there because it may be inappropriate for our standards.
I was going to go on to say,
oh, I'm sorry.
The Nazis went forward with removing books by Helen Keller as well. I mean, we're talking about a huge collection of books.
Yeah, huge. And of course, that illustrates the diabolical evil of the Nazis and why we have to be very careful with any comparison to them, because in modern history, there's never been a greater evil than Adolf Hitler and the Nazi regime, with the possible exception of maybe Stalin and Mao.
Yeah, I guess my thought
those guys who want, they got this socialist agenda, you got to be careful, right?
Yeah. And my thought always goes back to, in reality, where are the parents? I mean, if parents are with their child like they should be, why would they not be the ones to control, no, we're not going to check out this book?
Exactly. And I'm not sure what is the merit in even having a book that is so graphic that it's offensive. What is the educational value of a book like that?
You know, I'm not one to say, because
I'm not either.
I would say it belongs in a different section if it's in the kids section. And if it's obviously a book that doesn't belong in the kids section, put it elsewhere. But just the thought of the idea of removing, it's a slippery slope, and it would quickly lead to other books that we see as perfectly fine, perfectly normal. Why would those be the next books to be challenged?
And so I think you bring up a great question. We have, is there a standard, and this is a rhetorical, is there a standard that our community has that finds, regardless of the content, is there some publication out there that is so offensive that you would not bring it into the library? Is there? Or is there no standard whatsoever about what belongs in a public library? If there is a standard, then the question is, who gets to make the standard? Because that's what we're talking about. I would argue there are absolutely books that have no place in a public library. Now, that being said, and I think everybody will agree with that, you could come up with a book that is totally inappropriate for any occasion to be in a public library, funded by public tax dollars. If that's the case, now we have to decide, what is that standard? And I think that's what we're wrestling with.
We have to take a quick break, but we will be right back. And again, if you have any questions, text us at 615-893-1450.
Discover hidden treasures at the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street in Murfreesboro. Whether you're searching for stylish clothing, sturdy furniture, or even large appliances, we've got them all at prices that you'll love. But here's the best part. 100% of your purchase supports Greenhouse Ministries, serving over 70 families a day. Your shopping dollars go straight back into the community, making a real impact. Shop smart and give back at the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street in Murfreesboro.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Use caulk or weather stripping to seal leaks around your windows. Stopping drafts is one of the quickest ways to lower your winter bill. Get more ideas at mte.com/myenergyplan.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit recycleright.tn.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's recycleright.tn.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Go to recycleright.tn.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
Again, you're listening to the Action Line on WGNS, and with us in studio, we have Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr. And another question we had here is about TDOT's I-24 Smart Corridor project, which has been really going on for years.
It seems like the I-24 parking lot, Scott, is that what we're talking about?
That's it.
I would assume they're going to start work on that at some time in the distant future, but I honestly don't know the exact date of when they're going to start construction of that choice lanes. I will tell you this, when they do, traffic is going to go from bad to really, really bad. Just because, you know, when you start on a construction project of an existing road, it's a nightmare. So, and it's going to go on for several years. So while it's needed, I don't know. And we should have done this. We should have done this 10, 20 years ago. It's the problem. We didn't.
You know, and
lack of vision again.
when we see projects like the one taking place in Nashville between the Nashville B&A Airport and downtown, which is a tunneling project where, from what I understand, Teslas will transfer people from
Elon Musk.
From the airport to downtown.
And he's doing this on his own dime, apparently.
And then you always have complaints. People are complaining about the minerals that they'll be digging out, the rock.
I know. You can't make this up. And the problem that government has at the local, state, and federal level, and this has been the number one thing that I have tried to address since I was mayor through the team that I've got, and they are phenomenal, is that, guys, we got to quit thinking budget to budget. We got to quit reacting. We have to put long-range plans in place. It doesn't mean that those plans are in concrete, but we have to have a plan to deal with the growth of this county. Example, we have known, Scott, for 20 years that Rutherford County is the fastest-growing county in the state. Known that for 20 years. And yet, you would think that our leaders would have said, you know what, there doesn't seem to be any change in that growth trajectory. So we're still going to be the fastest growing county in the state 10 years from now, 20 years from now. So we got to think beyond our nose or this next budget cycle. And so for the first time ever, this county is looking forward out 10 and 20 years, whether it's Plan Rutherford, that's what that is. Whether it's a new jail, that's what that is. Whether it's now Commissioner Dodd and I are looking at, does the county need to get in the road building business? A lot of people think that we're in the road building business. We are not. Greg Brooks' department is in the road maintenance building business. We need to be in the road building business. And so we're looking at addressing all these needs that go toward congestion, infrastructure, so that we can get caught up. And it takes vision and a plan to do that. And so everything we do is, we're looking 5, 10, 20 years out.
We got like 1 minute left.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So last question. With the Rutherford County Property Assessor in that office, has an outside firm been contracted yet in order to go and reappraise, you know, a percentage of the properties?
No. The RFP, to my knowledge, it would come through purchasing, and the purchasing committee has authorized a request for proposals. That hadn't even been sent out yet.
Up in the air right now. Again, Rutherford County Mayor Joe Carr, thank you for joining us this
morning.
Thank
you, Scott. It's always a pleasure. Stay warm, stay dry, and be careful.
The Good Neighbor Network, WGNS, Murfreesboro, Smyrna, flagship station for MTSU sports.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. We really focus on value. They get value. They get more than what they pay for. They get a higher level service. They get higher level food at a price that is a lot more affordable. What we're trying to do is we're trying to give people the value, and again, that they were fulfilled both within their stomach and as well as their pockets. We want them to feel satisfied. Come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hello, this is Emily Messier, and I am a resident at Adams Place Assisted Living. I didn't really consider it any place else. I knew this is where I wanted to come. So there are a variety of sizes of spaces available to you to be in. So get your name on the list early.
This is Terry Deal. Call me at 615-904-9111. Adams Place, on Memorial, across from Walmart.
Local farmers, local meats, vegetables, and other produce at the Winter Spring Rutherford County Farmers Market.
Bundle up and make your way every Friday at Lane Avenue.